Welcome to the SMA News Today podcast. I'm your host, Kevin Schaefer. I have SMA Type 2, and I am a columnist and forums director for SMANewsToday.com. Welcome to the SMA News Today podcast. I'm your host, Kevin Schaefer, and joining me today is Dustin Swafford. Dustin is an adult with SMA who played and coached a power soccer team for quite a while now, and his team actually won the national championship this summer. He lives right outside Atlanta, and by day, he is a financial professional. So, Dustin, really glad to have you on today. Welcome.
Appreciate it, my brother. Nice to meet you. Nice to be on.
Absolutely. Well, before we get started, if everyone could please listen to a brief word from our sponsor.
This podcast is brought to you by Genentech, the makers of a treatment for SMA. Whether you are living with SMA or are the parent to a child with SMA, make a choice today that could impact your future. Visit treatmysma.com to see why treatment matters.
Okay. Well, Dustin, to start off, can you just tell listeners a little bit about your story and what it was like for you growing up with SMA?
Yeah, so basically, you know, I'm 40 years old. Grew up in a small town, just about 2 hours away from where I live now. Very small population, probably less than 5,000 people. Graduated high school, went to regular classes, just like every other kid. One of the cool things about my situation is that I was one of the only kids who went to regular classes. And so that was something I was kind of proud of. It was unique, but the kids were great. They never treated me any different than anybody else. And, you know, overall, I had a pretty normal childhood. One of the interesting things that I typically like to share with people is, you know, with SMA, you know, it can be quite a hard disease to deal with. And my parents found out when I was 18 months old. And the news wasn't very good. They actually told my parents to take me home and enjoy their time with me because, you know, I wouldn't be on this earth beyond the age of 12, most likely. And so to be here at the age of 40, I consider it a blessing. And I thank my Lord for that.
That's awesome. And I think that's a very common and a lot of the stories from people in our community, particularly like adults like us who were given that rather dismal narrative when we were diagnosed. But before we started recording, you mentioned you had a brother too. Is that your only sibling? Can you talk about just your family life in general?
Yeah. So my brother, he's about 2 years younger than me. Actually, he's like 2 months and 2 days being 2 years younger. So it's kind of cool. My mother, she pretty much raised me on her own with the help of her parents and also my father's grandparents. My father, he did commit suicide when I was 4 years old. So, you know, I do have very, very vague memories of him. But yeah, that's it's kind of how I come up, you know, and I wish I would have gotten to know him a little bit more, but you know, everybody has their own choices and decisions that they make. And, you know, we're here to deal with our situation. You know, life goes on.
That's well, thank you for sharing. And so being raised by your mother and then also like, does he have SMA or are you the only one in your family who has it?
No, my brother, he's perfectly healthy. He did have seizures when he was young, but he recovered from that. And he takes no medication. He's actually my primary caregiver.
Really?
So, yeah. I just moved up here with him. You know, with the pandemic and everything, caregiving got to be an issue. You know, people would not come in and everything like that. And so my brother, he was always flexible with me. He'd actually been trying to get me to move up here with him for probably the last 4 or 5 years. And, you know, me trying to be Mr. Independent, I stayed in Atlanta as long as I could. And then, you know, when I needed to make that change, I did. So I'm super grateful for him and all he does for me.
That's really cool. And we'll definitely, I want to talk more about this subject of caregiving, but I definitely want to get to that in a minute. But if we can backtrack for a sec, so growing up, was your mother your primary caregiver? Because, or did you have, you mentioned you had other family members kind of helping you out. Were they involved in the caregiving process as well?
Yeah, man. It takes a village to raise a person, you know. And my mother, she did probably 70-80%. But I had great grandparents, especially her parents. They were always there. My grandfather, he funny story about him. I remember him waking up every morning, even when he was 70, 80 year old. He would wake up at 6 o'clock every morning, do push-ups, sit-ups. He walked around the block every day and drank coffee. That was what he did. And we watched sports. He was really the one that introduced me to sports. So, you know, he did a good job, you know, taking care of me. And I would go stay the weekends with him and my granny, which was his wife. And then my father's parents, they lived in Alabama, which was a little bit further from me. But we would go over there and I would spend time with my cousins, and you know, we had a lot of get-togethers over there. That side of the family was very, very big. And like I said, on my mother's side, it was a small family.
That's really cool. I mean, and yeah, I think that's like you said, raising a taking a village to raise someone with SMA and anyone really, but that's it, the family dynamics I'm always interested talking about with different people in the community. And so yeah, let's focus on that for a sec. So you mentioned your grandfather or kind of got you interested in sports. So can you talk about that and how that passion evolved?
Yeah, really, some of my earliest and most fond memories was really sitting in his lap on Saturdays and watching wrestling. You know, he got me into it was NWA when I first started watching, and then it transitioned to WCW. And then on my other side of the family, they introduced me to the WWF. And so I just got a whole spectrum of what wrestling was. But with my grandfather, you know, spending so much time with him, he was a big baseball fan. And the Braves, you know, he loved the Braves and Dale Murphy. And so growing up, Dale Murphy was my favorite player until he moved on to the Rockies. And then Dave Justice came in. And I was just a huge, huge Dave Justice fan. And the funny thing about the story about baseball, in 95, the Braves traded away Dave Justice. And to be honest with you, ever since that day, I've never watched baseball. It completely broke my heart.
That's interesting. And then, well, and then when did soccer come into play in all that?
So basically, soccer didn't come into play until I guess I was about 20 year old, you know, going to NBA camp every summer. I actually am a big, big football fan. I actually coached high school football for 5 years. But what I would do every year or every summer, going to MDA camp, I would always take a football, always. And so me and a bunch of my friends, we would actually skip some of the activities that they had scheduled for us during the day, and we would just go to the pavilion and play football. And I mean, we hit each other, broke footrests, broke bones. Like we went at it. But you know, still to this day, two of the guys that used to play football with at camp, they're on my soccer team, and we all started power soccer at camp. We had two guys, well, actually three guys, come out. They had just moved from California, and they were in the business of starting power soccer teams. And they introduced us to the sport. And the day that they came, we probably played that sport the whole day. They came before lunch. We put a guard on and we didn't take it off until they left. Like, we just fell in love. And if There was four people, me, or five actually, myself, another friend of mine named Bernard, Taiwan, Billy, and Adam. We decided that day that we were going to start a team no matter what. And that's what we did. And within that first year, we won Eastern Regionals.
And so you started that team to get, like, was there a league already in place that you then joined, or were you kind of starting all of this up from the ground up?
Yeah, so basically there was only one team in our area that had just been started by the people that came out to the MDA camp. And now out in California where they're from, they had already been playing, I want to say 15, 20 years, and in Canada as well. But we had never heard of the sport, or I hadn't. So it was completely new. Wasn't, like I said, wasn't many teams in the area. But now, oh man, I think there's something like 50 to 60 teams in our league.
That's amazing. Yeah, I was telling you before we started recording, I did a little bit of power wheelchair hockey when I was a kid, and a friend of mine started that, and he did it for a long time, running that team and being really involved with the organization. But it's really fascinating, and I love that you said how it just, evolved at summer camp. And you telling that story, have you seen the documentary Murderball, the one about wheelchair rugby?
Oh yeah, oh yeah. We
Yeah,
actually
yeah.
go to Birmingham to play tournaments where that was where a lot of that murder ball was filmed.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, I remember seeing that in high school. It's fascinating, and it's, and like, I'm not even a sports guy, but just like, I just find the whole atmosphere of it really fascinating. And there's that, and then the comedian Josh Blue was in a soccer league, I think, for a while as well. He talks about that in his comedy specials. But yeah,
Oh, was he a rugby player?
he it was soccer. He did, like, I think it was like it was with the Special Olympics, or I forget what kind of league that was, because he has cerebral palsy, so he's not a wheelchair user. But he talks about that as comedy specials, doing with, like, adaptive sports with other disabled players and stuff. And yeah, he did that for a while. But
Yeah, one of the guys that's on my team, Scott Stokes. He is a rugby player, so he's been with the national team, and so yeah, I didn't know maybe they knew each other or something like that.
Oh, it's very possible. That's, yeah, I think it's a really tight-knit community, so that's awesome. Well, and so thinking, so looking at that point in your life, so you started that kind of like at camp, so you were like high school age. Can you talk about, I mean, post high school, what your plans were, what you were doing then, and and kind of like, because obviously you're very independent now, what was kind of your journey to that point?
Yeah, so in high school, when I was very, I got an opportunity to kind of do some scouting with my high school football coach, because I loved it so much. And what I would do is he would give me the tapes of the other teams. I would take them home, and back then we used the VCR. So we'd pop the tape in the VCR, and I would rewind and fast forward and stop, and I would jot down and really detail all of their plays and give that to the coach so that they could do their game planning. And really just fell in love with it, and decided then that I really wanted to be involved in sports, especially football. So I had a dream of becoming a football coach. So when I graduated high school, my high school coach had made the connection with the head coach at Middle Tennessee State University. So went through the whole process, had got my dorm room and my classes, everything set. And about a month before I was going to report to the campus, I got a call. And the director there had started asking me questions about, the caregiving aspect and how it works, because I already went prior to that on a visit and was under the assumption, that they had people there to help, not full time, but part time, and that there were agencies in the vicinity that could, you know, pitch in and do the rest. So anyway, it didn't happen the way I thought. When he called me a month before I reported, he was like, you know, what are you gonna do? And I didn't really have a plan at the time. I was gonna be the first person in my family to attend college. And so they didn't know about the whole process. And you know, one thing led to another, didn't end up getting to go there. So I took about a year off, and then from there I decided I still wanted to go to college. So I attended a community college that was about an hour and a half away from where I lived. And I did that for a semester, and I just decided at that point, you know, it was a long trip. My mother and other family members were having to take me there, wait, and then take me back home. And so I'm like, it's just not logistically sound. So I stopped going to college and didn't really do much after that for a while. I was kind of not depressed, but you know, disappointed that the obstacles were being thrown in my way.
That's right. And so, and then during that kind of transition, because I know you work in finance now, were there any kind of it was that an interest that developed around that time, or was that later?
Yeah, that was actually during the pandemic. You know,
Okay.
even in school, I've always loved math. Math was my strong suit. Numbers were my friend. And so when the pandemic hit, I kind of had to step away from football, unfortunately. And I noticed when the stock market crashed, it went down like 35% in about 30 days or so. And I was like, man, what? Why is this? Why does the stock market crash? And so one thing led to another, and I just got very, very involved, started learning everything on my own. And then I was introduced to like the Dave Ramsey's and stuff like that, and started understanding, you know, more about how money works and, you know, the situation that we're in our country. You know, not only are we, you know, $16 trillion in consumer debt, but we're over $30 trillion in, you know, government debt. And so I was like, man, my time coaching football, I knew I loved to compete and I knew I loved to win. But what I found out was I really, really enjoyed helping other people accomplish their goals. So that is what led me into the financial industry.
That's really cool. And I want to talk more about that in a minute, and also how your independence evolved too. But before we continue, if everyone could please listen to one more brief word from our sponsor.
This podcast is made possible by Genentech, the makers of a treatment for SMA. If you're living with SMA, the subtle changes that happen from one day to the next can be hard to notice until a key function is lost. Many people find that these changes can impact their life, not just physically, but also emotionally. Since the progression of SMA is relentless, taking action now is important. If you've waited to go on treatment or were told there were no treatments for you, now might be the time to talk to your doctor. Breakthroughs in science have led to more options than ever before in treatment and care. Choosing a disease-modifying treatment can make a difference. Why wait? Visit treatmysma.com to see why treatment matters.
Okay, so Dustin, so backtracking just a minute, because I love that about how that journey evolved and how you got to a point where you were really interested in helping others and in building, you know, this financial career. But backtracking just a little, so when you were in community college and at that stage, you still had your family as your primary caregivers. Did you get to a point where you were hiring outside help as well? And what did that process look like?
Yeah, so I never had ever had anyone else do my care other than like the people at MDA camp, you know, the counselors and stuff like that. Being in a smaller town, I had no idea about the resources that were available to people with disabilities. And that wasn't until I moved to Atlanta in 2006. And I started meeting other people who had disabilities and, you know, just talking to them in conversations. I was like, man, these people, they're doing things that I had never heard of. And come to find out, you know, about ICWP and the Independent Care Waiver Program and how you can hire different people to work for you. You're not tied to an agency and things of that nature. And so, like I said earlier, my world is kind of opened up even further with communication and the programs that are available to us.
Yeah, it's definitely, and I know what you mean in terms of a lot of times it's you don't know where to get started because like they don't like advertise, you know, what programs are in your area or how to get, you know, whether you're going through something like Medicaid or a different program or whatever it may be, and where to get started. But what was that like in terms of once you did get kind of on those programs and you started hiring outside help, what was that transition like of working with people other than family members to do your care?
Yeah, so kind of a funny story. I had a friend of mine live with me, and he had cerebral palsy, and he needed some assistance, not near as much as I did. But so what the agency did first before I got onto the ICWP program was they would send one aide out to do my care and to do his care. And I'm a little bit more outgoing guy than he is. And sometimes my relationship with the caregivers would kind of overshadow the work that they would need to be doing for him. And there were just, you know, instances where, you know, he would get, I'm not gonna say jealous, but there was times where the caregivers were giving me more attention because our relationship was stronger. But we went through that process. We probably shared about three caregivers. And then we decided, like, he needs his own dedicated person. And I needed mine because it just wasn't working. And so from that point, when I actually got approved for the Independent Care Waiver Program, I just started hiring my family members because back then you could do that. Now it's very hard to get your family members into the program. So we did that for probably about 5 or 6 years. Then my brother moved up here from Atlanta. And my mother, she was getting older. She couldn't do everything she used to could do for me. So I found a guy who was a friend of another friend. And he took over and started doing my care in the mornings and sometimes at night. And from there, you know, we just kept it going. And we're still good friends to this day. He was still doing my care up until I moved up here.
That's really cool. And and it's interesting you say that about living with your friend with CP. I think I think a lot of people in our community do is kind of tag team with other disabled people to kind of like make that transition smoother and you can share caregivers. It's definitely something I've thought of. And you know, there are pros and cons to any situation like that, but that's a cool experience. And then now, so what is it like your brother being your main caregiver? And I know you talked about it a little bit earlier, but I think that's a really interesting dynamic as well.
Yeah. So like I said, you know, my brother, he had been trying to get me to move up here for probably about the past 5 years. He's married, and they've got 4 cats and a dog. And they're living the happy life. And you know, my brother, he always maintained his work life and did things to where, you know, he could take off whenever I needed help or my mother needed help. And, Just always been there to help. So, moving up here has been a really smooth transition. He does everything for me. Like anytime I need to go anywhere, anytime I want to go anywhere, he's there and makes the sacrifice. And his wife as well, Jennifer, she's great.
That's awesome. It's a really cool relationship to have. I know, and I have two great siblings also who don't have SMA. But it's rare that I find someone in the community where like their sibling is their main caregiver. So I think that's a really cool relationship to have. And then like, and now, so like you're in finance and you still do the soccer team. What does kind of your daily life look like? And are you working full time in finance? And then how do you balance that with the soccer team?
Yeah, so right now the soccer team, we start basically in October, November, and we go through June, and it's not really a hectic kind of thing. We practice one time a week in Atlanta, and then we usually play one week in the month, and so that's really not a strain on me on my schedule or anything, but with the financial the financial industry, I decided that I wanted to start my own business. There are many different ways you can do it. You can sell insurance, and I do have my insurance license. But I wanted to go a more personal route. I wanted to help people. I wanted to educate people. They say you give a person a fish, and they'll need you forever. But if you teach them how to fish, they'll love you forever. And so I would rather teach people how to fish, how to become financially independent, rather than to have them rely on me and my knowledge all the time.
That's really cool. And I think, friend I was talking about earlier, before recording, who does that, he works in finance as well. He has that same kind of approach. I think it's from what I know about that industry, it seems like you have more freedom and can really do the kind of work that you want to do helping other people when you have your own business versus working for a big company or something like that,
Yeah.
And so do you kind of like, do you just work from home and kind of schedule appointments virtually, or what is kind of like your daily task and work look like?
Yeah, so right now, just starting the business, I'm learning how to market myself. Not being able to get out as much as maybe some other people and networking and things of that nature. It's a challenge, but it's a challenge that I'm up for. I enjoy it. Like just coming on here and meeting you, just love to meet new people regardless of the business and all of that. But right now I'm just in the process of growing and getting the information out about what I do, about how I help families and so forth.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And going back to the soccer team for a minute, so what was it like winning the championship this summer?
Oh my gosh. It was amazing. It was amazing. And to do it with my best friend and my brother. Like my brother, he's actually the assistant coach. And so just a very unique experience. Me and my friend Tom Juan, we came into the sport together on our first team, and we never got a chance to win the championship together. About 4 years in, we had a teammate that had passed away, another teammate that had moved on and was doing some other things. And I really didn't have the transportation at the time to get back and forth. And so he kind of went on his merry way and got involved with another team and had really great success, but they never could get over the hump of winning the championship. And about 4 about 5 years ago, the Shepherd Center, who that's our team, they we had some people come in and donate us about $60,000 to get brand new soccer chairs, because all of us at that point We were playing in our everyday chairs, and it wasn't the most realistic and competitive way to go about things. But seeing the program through, they donated us the funds, and I got my friend back involved with the team, and we've just grown tremendously from that standpoint. And winning that championship, it was just a culmination of everything. I'd never seen him cry before that. And just to have those tears of joy, you know what I'm saying? We are all of us. We're like a band of brothers. And we all love each other. We fight for each other. We fight with each other. I always tell them, I think if you agree with everyone you hang around with, it's a boring life. And we really challenge each other. And that's what I love about them. And yeah, winning the championship was just, it was the peak, man. We showed up there. Our first game, we ended up going down. We were down 1-0. In the second half, we fought back and won that game. And we went on to win every game in that tournament. And yeah, it was just unique, man. The stories that I could tell from that, I could talk about them for hours.
I bet, especially with how far it goes back to when you formed that team to now. And that's just, and like you said, that just the mentality you have of challenging each other, growing with each other, I think that really adds a whole nother layer to it.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Well, this has been great, Dustin. And I just wrapping up here. Do you have any advice or message you want to share with others in the SMA community?
I think the one thing I would say is, independence is a huge topic right now. But I would just say, think about this. Independence is overrated. And the reason why I say that is because we all need each other, whether you have a disability or whether you don't. We all need each other. And life without each other, worthless, in my opinion. That's my opinion. But I try to do as much as I can, but there's things that I can't do. And I don't hang my head about it. I just keep grinding and I find a way. One of the one quote that I really like, guy told me, he says, "Know what you know and know who knows what you don't. That's all you need to know." And so, it really stuck with me, and I try to live that way.
No, I think that's a really profound statement. And like you said, I think even with being independent, like in our situation, that still doesn't mean you're without relying on others, and in a not in a negative way. I think that's just like a beautiful thing about humanity and relationships. We're kind of made for each other. So that's really cool.
Yes, sir.
Awesome. Well, Dustin, it's been great talking with you. And while we close out, do you have so where can people find you now that you're getting your business started? Do you have website or social media people can follow?
Yeah, don't have a website yet, but you can follow me at Cash Coins and Capital. That's on Twitter and also on Instagram as well.
Awesome. Well, we'll definitely put that in the description here. But yeah. Well, Dustin, thanks again. This has been great. So I really love hearing your story and best of luck as you get the business started and all your other endeavors.
Appreciate you, Kevin.
Absolutely. And for our listeners out there, you can find more stories and conversations like this by subscribing to the SMA News Today podcast. You can also connect with us directly on our forums and follow our main website at smanewstoday.com for all the latest SMA news and perspectives. I'm your host, Kevin Schaefer. Thanks for listening, and we will see you next time. Take care.
The information in our flash briefings and podcasts are provided for informational and educational purposes only. Be sure to tune in daily to SMA News Today for the latest news and perspectives regarding the disease. Discover more content that might be of interest to you at www.smanewstoday.com. and be sure to follow us on social media and join our SMA News Today forums, a trusted SMA community ready to welcome you anytime.